This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about many things, TSP, as it relates to financial planning, distribution options, and the like. And the guest this morning, two attorneys, Steve Wittes, right?
With
the firm Stein Sperling, and Micah Bonaveri.
Well done.
Okay. I prepped before we went on the show, and my name is Bob Lines. I'm an accountant finance type, and this is NITP's For Your Benefit. And we'll open up the lines in a little bit. We just want to get our feet wet with the two guys. First time on the show, hopefully not last. So TSP and how it relates to one's retirement planning, pre-retirement planning, but more so, I guess we're going to talk distribution options, but we can do anything. We already have two emails, so it looks like there are people that are going to be tuned in. And the TSP, certainly it's a help with the CSRS, but it's more than a help with FERS. In other words, the TSP, I guess, takes the place of Social Security, if you will, if you look on the two sides. CSRS, your retirement is pretty much based on years in service, highest compensation, and the TSP as a help. FERS, you really need the three in concert. The question is, which plays the major role? Of course, you're going to take the annuity because the annuity is coming to you. Social Security, you do have an option to take it or not till 70 and a half. And TSP, you have an option to take it or not till 70 and a half. So why don't we drill in on the second one, because that's got the more variables. As I understand it, guys, there's, with regards to the TSP, you can put a certain amount of money in, and there's a defined something and there's a defined something. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that the basic FERS annuity is a defined benefit plan. Is that right?
Good morning, Bob. That is right. Essentially, the annuity is what is referred to as a defined benefit plan. The focus on X dollars are going to come out once you've retired. And if one said, well, gee, but can I look over there and is there really an account balance that I can look and get a monthly statement on? The latter is really focused on a defined contribution plan. Defined contribution is your typical IRA, 401k, or in this case, a thrift savings plan, which we're going to call TSP for short. And that one is you can actually look that there's a specific balance. And on the system under FERS, which has obviously been around since 87, that is really the more focus is more on the thrift savings as opposed to just the annuity. So the defined contribution thrift savings plan is clearly the big focus under this new three-prong approach.
So kind of the employee defines the contribution of what they're going to put into the TSP. The other, the defined benefit, it's defined by the benefit uncle's going to pay you when you're done based on years in service and highest compensation. Is that too simplistic a way to look at it?
I think it's a right way to look at it. I view in some ways Social Security and your basic benefit plan with the annuity as both defined benefit plans. They're going to pay you X dollars per month, hopefully for that long life you and your spouse are going to live, or you and your significant other. But and the thrift savings plan is really the defined contribution. And for most of us that like to look at our how we're doing, we can access it and find out what that value is. Or in the case of a couple of recent weeks, not look at it because we get sick. But but at least we want to look at it and get a sense that we can look at that account and see what's actually there. And it's a pretty generous plan. I mean, the government's got a nice plan, a nice approach. There's some ways in which you can put quite a bit away, and it'll be matched by the government as well.
Okay, and there's a certain amount that you can put into the TSP. I think it's two-phased. One, if you have not attained the age of 50, the most you can put in is X, and if you're 50 or over, you can put in Y. Or how does that break down? I always get confused.
Yeah, no, it can be very confusing. The first thing to keep in mind is that you can make contributions as an employee, and then the agency that you work for can actually make contributions on your behalf. So it's sort of, there's two parts to this. As an employee, you can make regular contributions to the TSP. That's maxed out at $17,500 a year for this year. And then you can also make what's called catch-up contributions. And those are, if you haven't made enough, the maximum contributions in the year before, you can actually begin making those contributions when you turn 50. And that amount is maxed out, and I believe $5,500 a year. So once you've hit that after you're 50, you start doing the catch-up contributions of $5,500. You can't do more than that to catch up.
Okay, and that one of those two got a bump up for 2013, $500 more than what it was in 2012, if I'm not mistaken, the big number.
That's right, and we anticipate it's going to happen again next year, but we're not sure. You know, there's sort of that little black box that the government's got that we're not quite sure what they're going to say about it. But the 17 going to 17.5, and as Micah noted, if you look at the 17.5 with the 5,500 for those that have attained what I view as a young age of 50, that is 23 right there. And if you look at matching contributions up to the 5% by the government, it can add up pretty quickly. And it's an incredible system. I also think, though, one has to be careful, and we'll get into more of the tax issues, but you're putting it into a tax-deferred program. People always say tax-free. It's tax-deferred. You can't get ahead of yourself on that. But it's a very generous program, and it makes no sense to me why people wouldn't put it away unless they've got that incredible trust fund that most of us don't have.
Okay, that's a good point. It's a defined contribution, but it's deferred. I won't say that this was my wording, but Greg Long, the director of the thrift, uses his term when he comes in. He says, pay me now or pay me later. So, you know, pay me later is what we have now with the tax deferral. I get the tax benefit when it goes in, and I'll pay the taxes when it comes out. I think that's the way it works, right, guys?
That's right. And we want to get in a couple minutes, maybe a little talk about Roth, but one of the other aspect that's important, and people are often who come in from the private system are saying, well, when is this money promised to me? You know, do I get it right away? So if somebody goes ahead and puts in, I mean, it doesn't have to be $17,500 or nothing, but let's say somebody's able to put in $6,000. You know, they may have a few other obligations in this world, like most of us. If they put away the $6,000, that is promised. That is vested. That can't be taken away from them. Also, mostly what the government matches is vested as well. However, that initial 1% that the government puts in automatically is subject to a 3-year vesting, as I recall.
So, just so that everybody understands, including me, vesting means it's mine after a period of time.
Yeah. So basically, going back to the types of contributions you can make as an employee, you can make the ones that we previously talked about, the up to $17,500 a year. But you can also get the contributions made by the government on your behalf. And there's two parts to that as well. The first is an automatic contribution of 1% of your basic pay each year to this TSP account. That's the one that's subject to these vesting rules. So you actually don't become entitled to the money, that 1% that's accumulating, until you've worked at the federal government for a period of 3 years. If you leave for some reason before that, then you forfeited that amount of money. However, if you do die before the vesting, it is considered to have been vested. So
isn't that special?
Generally, you have to work there for the 3 years, though, in order to have that 1% vested and actually be yours. The other part to the contributions by the agency is what's called the matching contributions, which Steve touched upon. And that actually has no vesting requirement. So that is considered yours once you've earned it. And the way that that works is anything that you put into your account, the federal government will match up to the first 5% of that each year. And the breakdown of it is that the first 3% that the federal government pays is actually dollar for dollar. And then the next 2% is matched at a 50 cents on the dollar ratio. So up to that 5% that you put in will be matched by the government. Anything above that will not be matched.
Okay, so if I step back and look at this, I could put money in out of my salary, and as Steve mentioned, maybe that's $6,000, $7,000, mm-hmm. and I would get a tax benefit from that under the pay me later. I'll get a tax deduction now. It will continue to grow tax deferred, not tax free, until some later date, and then I'll have to pay the tab when I pull a piece of it out. It's not when I retire I have to pay tax on everything. Pay me later. I know we're going to do the Roth TSP in a little bit, but the Roth TSP is just the opposite. You can put the same amount in, but you will pay the taxes. You won't get a tax benefit currently because you're not going to pay taxes on anything that comes out of it later. Later can be defined later, but isn't that the theory?
It is. And Bob, people find this incredibly confusing, including people like us that are in this world. But the fact is, it's like pay me now or pay me later is exactly right. The nice thing about the Roth, and we'll get into greater detail about how it's done, is that what people are often confused about, and yes, you get stuck with the taxes right away if you pay it right away, but when Micah and I were preparing for the show, we discussed the fact that we ran some numbers and thought, even if you get $100 or the $6,000 goes, well, let's say $5,000 goes into a Roth as part of the TSP, which is an option now. If it goes in there and that $5,000 grows to $10,000 by the time somebody's retired, no matter how it's taken out, it's tax-free, including the growth on that Roth. So even though you've paid the tax up front, that is then protected going forward as well as the growth on that percentage of the account. So it's sort of a more or less a pro rata portion of your total TSP that's the Roth protected portion.
Right. And just as a sideline, this sounds too good to be true. And it is true. And the other way to look at it is I teach primarily pre-retirement groups. I don't teach that much at the beginning. Now the company does. The pre-retirement group always likes to hear about it until you tell them the taxes that they have to pay on it. Because, again, you have to pay it up front. Mm-hmm. So to get the same amount in, they're going to have to add the tax cost in on top of it. And that gets to be a lot of money. The younger somebody is, they kind of, that's in the future, I can wait. But they really have the miracle of compounding working on their side. And they would, they should be glad to pay the taxes in advance because they're never going to be in a lower bracket than what they are when they first start working. And they pay the taxes up front and let that percolate for 20, 30, 40 years. They're going to be happy campers. Mid-career, got to scratch your head. Yeah, they probably have a lot of demands on the money. Not everybody gets married. Not everybody has children. But as we, as we grow through life, we become a little bit more consumption-oriented at the mid-stage of the career than what we were at the beginning, and maybe even at the end.
Well, and part of that, Bob, is not everybody's got that little slush fund to pay the taxes on the Roth portion, too, because you obviously don't want to take it from, any kind of protected tax-deferred plan. So if you got that little brokerage account down the road that's sitting in money market that's earning, 0.1% or something right now, maybe you want to go ahead and use that to pay the taxes, but you sure don't want to pay it from any other kind of IRA or other retirement plan.
I think another thing just to keep in mind is because with the Roth in particular, you pay the taxes up front, if you don't need that money, you can leave it in there for as long as you want. There's no sort of required distribution age, required withdrawal age. And if you never need it, it's actually nice because you can just leave it in there and then leave it for a child later on. So the tax advantages of it are really nice.
All righty. Once we get the money in there, however we get it in there, if we were not retired, and let's say we're even mid-career, and we say, gee, I've got a lot of money here, I'd like to have access to it. Now, I don't want to pay taxes on it, but do I have the ability to borrow from it? And the answer is, I believe you can, but there's certain maximums, and you will have to pay it back, not because you're going to write a check. They're going to take it out of your paycheck before you can't pay it back.
Well, as far as loans, I mean, loans generally from a TSP plan are allowed, but people assume, well, gee, can I take it from, you know, everything? I believe it's restricted to pretty much what you've put in, you know, is going to be the restriction on the loan ability. And if you're doing it, you can't keep doing it a lot. You know, there are some restrictions on that and the frequency, but it's normally to the extent that you've actually put money in and you're essentially borrowing from yourself, but that's a little bit of a slippery slope too, because you want to try to let that money grow without, you know, accessing it too quickly.
That's a bullseye too, because when it comes out in the ratio of where the money is. So just, you know, if it was in a third, a third, a third into the three different funds, it comes out a third, a third, a third. If it was 80% in a growth fund and 20%, say, in the G fund, it comes out 80%. So it's kind of like pulling a log out of the fire.
Well, Bob, and I think it's also the issue is, as I recall, that if you've got a Roth portion, so let's say that's 40% of your plan and 60% is non-Roth, I think your loan is going to be treated the same way, I believe.
Yeah.
So it's not, you just can't say, no, I just want to take it from the taxable portion. They're
mirror images, but there's a way around everything, I suppose, with the ability to move money between the funds. And somebody was, we'll get, forget Roth for just a second, if they were 80-20, 80% in a growth fund and 20% in the G fund, if they were to switch those allocations around to 80% in the G and 20% in the growth fund and then ask for the loan, then the money comes out of the one and doesn't come so much out of the other. And then after that, they can move it back.
That's right.
And maybe that's a little aggressive thinking, but we have talked about that with folks before. All righty. So, okay, we put it in. We can take it out. We can borrow, rather. But eventually, we have to take it out or we want to take it out. But let's talk about when we have to take it out. I mean, you can't just let it sit there till forever. I think there's an age requirement, but if somebody works to an advanced age, then it's when they retire. But it can sit in there for a fairly long time, if I'm not mistaken, like 70 and a half?
Yeah, you're getting into what we fondly refer to as the Goldilocks rules. You know, there's always the issue that is most people, and we'll get into comparisons of TSP versus private plans and IRAs, but generally, the old rule is that if you're going to try to take something out before 59 and a half, it's too early. And there's generally a 10% penalty on that, with certain exceptions. Most rules, and there are some ways to get money out. If there's hardship, there's medical needs, people get divorced, there may be educational requests that are made of the TSP program. And there's ways to get early distribution. But at some point, so somebody hears this other, the too late rule. You know, what about when somebody's 70 and a half? Unlike in an IRA, as long as you're still working, you don't have to take out what is required, is known as the RMD, the required minimum distribution. So if you're still working for the government, and unlike an IRA, you don't have to start taking money out when you're 70 and a half. I don't know if people are still, I know a lot of people are still working way beyond 70 and a half, but at that point, if they stopped working, then they would have to, of course, start taking money out. And if they didn't, whereas there's 10% up front if you're taking too little, if you're not taking it out when you have to at 70 and a half, it's a 50% penalty.
It's awful. All right.
Yeah. Goldilocks can be a pretty rude story in this situation.
Is that a court case?
The Goldilocks rule, yeah, pretty much so. Something like the gold rules or something. I don't know.
Okay, but let's look at that because in teaching, I would say that a significant number of people are unsure of what the required minimum distribution. Sometimes they call it the required mandatory distribution. They get very upset about that. And I go, well, now I have a chart. You know, it's the IRS chart. And I said, look at 70.5, and the number to the right of it is 26.4. And I said, that's not a percentage. That's a life expectancy or whatever the number is. And you divide it in there, and actually the first year it's 3.6%. It's not a killer. And the second year it might be 3.8%. It might go to 4. So it gradually goes up. And in fact, they have people figuring that the life is going to go out to 115 plus 2 years. And if they make it to 117, they get another 2 years to 109. In other words, you can't outlive it. Now, there might not be much money left then, but people are very anxious about this 70.5, and why do you have to do it? And the answer is kind of not so pleasant, but it's pretty clear. They haven't taxed you yet, and at 70.5, there isn't a lot of time left to get you before you go, so that's why they have it.
Well, they have, but you have to understand what's called the Uniform Lifetime Table, which is something that most people understand, and I'm finding a lot of federal retirees kind of have that on the side there because they kind of want to know what's going to go on. Well, how that's calculated, at 70.5, your life expectancy is a little over 17 years. They recalculate it every few years. And what they do is that's 17 years plus they assume there's at least 10 years for the life expectancy of the survivor. So that little, as it turns out to be 3.65%, the only reason I remember that is it works out for the days of the year, but but it's 1 over this 27. And under that, it's basically that 3.6 something you've got to take out the first year, and they recalculate the next year. So now that you've survived another year, it doesn't go down to 126, but it's something equivalent to that. It's a little bit different if it's going to go on to a beneficiary, but at least if it's to the spouse or to the participant, it is going to be based under the Uniform Lifetime Table that way.
All right. Can we do beneficiaries later? Not now, because there is a pretty unfortunate situation that presented itself, and with regards to somebody that passed, and there was a significant amount of money in the thrift, and it went to a spouse, and the spouse passed very soon thereafter, and then it went to the kids. Ouch. But let's go there later, because that's kind of heavy duty. And as much fun as we're having it, we're almost halfway done, so let's turn the phones on. We're at 202-465-3080. 202-465-3080. And we're here with two tax attorneys, Steve Wittes.
Right.
All right, I'm doing this good. And Micah Bonavari. And call, talk to any one of the three of us. Talk to Andrew if you like. Andrew knows his stuff, so he can answer the questions. Anyway, Andrew will answer the phone and we'll get it. But we did have one email. Actually, we had two emails this morning. And one was our friend from the West Coast. And let me read the email. Let's say that one has $500,000 in the TSP. Would one use an annuity for $250,000 and keep the balance of the TSP for future use? In other words, I think the question is, I've got I know somebody that's got $500,000 in the TSP. I'm going to leave $500,000 in, but I'm going to take $200 out and buy the MetLife annuity that's sponsored by the TSP. Not sponsored. They're the ones that sell it. And so would that strategy work to minimize my taxes? How would the annuity rate index come into play? Do you foresee an annuity rate index of 5% within 3 years? If I knew that, I wouldn't be on the air, but I'd be playing the bond market. Well, let's just slice it and dice it. These are all good questions. So we've got X dollars, $500,000 in there. If we were to buy an annuity, let's not say today because interest rates seem to be on the rise. But if we did buy it today, we'd be buying it and would be subjected to interest rates and the age at the time we buy it. I mean, I think that's what they do. Because if somebody young goes in and says, I want an annuity for the rest of my life, then the actuary's got to figure out how long that's going to last. Investment people have to make at least as much as what they're paying the annuitant and then some. And then the marketing people can't go out and say, we're going to pay 0.1% because nobody's going to come to the door. So let's go back to the question. Right now, if we were to buy it, ignoring interest rates, how does it help us tax-wise? I guess the half that stays in the TSPs doesn't have to be touched till 70 and a half, and the other would be fully taxable, the annuity, but it would be spread out over a period of time. But with the size of $250,000, it's not going to be a small number. Help me if I'm wrong.
All right. In my mind, I view it less, Bob, as a tax question than I view it as financial planning.
Okay.
I'm finding that a lot of our, this is coming up, whether it's the private world or it's coming up for the federal employees, is many years ago, there was some cynicism about using annuities, period, because there's thinking that, well, it's rigid, it's locked in. My take is since 2008, that since we, I think all of us got our hats handed to us a little bit with some financial, or except you, Bob, that I know did well. No, I don't know if that's new.
I am the world's worst investor, so.
I think I'm number two then. But the fact is, in a way, it locks in. So you have some guarantee. There's a floor by which you know you're going to have that amount. So as you approach retirement, it may be very good and to go ahead and at the same time make sure that you're securing something for the future and having other amounts available to you that you're holding off determining.
Okay, great. Great answer. Great time to take a phone call. Good morning.
Good morning.
How may we help you?
Quick question. I'm planning to retire at the end of this year in CSRS offset. And the question is whether or not, is it possible, and I think I know the answer is no, but is it possible to use any of the year-end or accumulated lump sum payment for annual leave or a payment for a buyout to apply that to a contribution to the thrift plan for the tax year 2014.
Okay, let's take each one and bring in one that we didn't talk about. The final paycheck can go into the thrift. That's not what you want to do, though. Your accumulated leave, assuming you're CSRS, I don't know if you have use, lose, or not, really none of my business, but if it's sizable, you're going to get tagged with tax. Unfortunately, it can't go into the thrift. But what it can go into, potentially, is as good as the thrift, and some would argue better, it can go into the voluntary contribution program. I'll show you how to do that. It's not quite as simple as I made it. Do you know how the voluntary contribution program works?
I have an account set up.
Okay. So what you'd have to do in this case is, let's say that your accumulated leave is worth X dollars. Now, you're going to have to pay taxes on that, but don't look at what would be withheld. Look at what your real taxes would be on it. So take X minus the real taxes you're going to pay, and you're going to come up with a dollar amount. Go out and borrow that money. Take the borrowed money, put it in your voluntary contribution account. When you retire, you get your accumulated leave check minus the real taxes, pay the loan off, you effectively put it in the VC. And you got a Roth IRA, with a significant amount of money in it if it doesn't have that already. Did that make sense?
It's a little convoluted, but I guess what I'm getting at is whether or not there would be a way to mitigate the tax impact by being able to allocate those monies to the thrift savings plan. But
can't,
I think what I'm hearing
can't
is
do it.
That I can't do it.
Your question is good because for a few years, I'm sure it was a local person in Congress, put into the law, yes, this should be allowed, but with a tax-hungry Congress, they have not allowed that. So your thought process is right on. So if I can't do it with that, I might as well do it with the other. It doesn't answer your question because you want to cut the taxes on it, but that there's no way to cut the taxes on it because you're going to pay taxes on it. Sorry.
From a cash flow standpoint, though, could I mitigate it by filing a revised W-4 form and increasing my exemptions for year-end?
You could do that. I'd rather hold on to the money. If you increase...
Well, I'm thinking that by doing that, that would increase the net amount going into my pocket.
Well, it will. I mean, because the more exemptions you claim, the less taxes you have withheld. So you'll have
right.
a greater you'll have a greater bring home.
Right, because the ultimate tax bill wouldn't be due until April 2015.
Exactly.
Admittedly, I could make estimated payments along the way, but having covered that base, I take it then that the answer to the buyout sum would also be no.
That's true. Now, they're all on a W-2, so they actually could go into a deductible IRA. And if you're going out at the end of the year, or early part of January?
Right.
So your CSRS, so you're going to do that. And in the first year, it's none of my business how many years service you have, but if you multiply that times 2%, you might have as much money in your first year of retirement as you do on your last year on the job. When you add all those together.
Right.
Which is a good thing, except when it comes to April 15th of the next year. Now, you sound like you're pretty good managing your money, so you actually don't have to file estimated taxes if you have at least as much paid in tax as you had in the prior year, with one exception. If your total income exceeds $150,000, it has to be 110% of last year.
Right.
And then watch yourself at the end of the year. You would like to, if you're in a state that has a state income tax, watch out with your alt-min. If you pay it early in December, you could pay more alt-min tax.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Bob.
Okay. Take care. Okay.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. All righty. That was a good call. I mean, some heavy-duty questions. They were great questions. All righty, so let's come on back. It looks like we got another caller. Andrew? Okay, he says, keep talking, Bob. All righty, so when we talked about the TSP, and as our caller just mentioned, and the previous emailer, this becomes not the easiest to understand for those that have never looked at this stuff before. So let's go back to the emailer from California, and he was going to take half the money in the thrift, half of the $500,000, and buy an annuity of $250,000. My gut feel is I don't know that I'd buy the annuity right now. And that was part of his question. Do you foresee an annuity rate going up within the next 3 years? So it gives me a feeling that he's planning. He's not going to do it today, but do you think it would hit 5% in the next 3 years? I hesitate to say I think, because somebody's going to say, well, he said that. I didn't say that. But if you're looking at interest rates the last few months, they haven't exactly gone down.
Bob, I don't think there's any assurance one way or the other, but the trend, or at least what most of the markets are indicating, is it appears that the interest rates are going to go up. I don't think we're going to be like the Japanese and end up, you know, 0%, the trend tends to be waiting a little bit. So I think that there's a good chance it might be a good option, and you know that's a good approach. But at least I like balancing the check and balance a person is taking too.
Okay, I like that. But we got another caller. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. My question has to do with when a participant is over 70 and a half, and they're already taking required minimum distributions. If they wanted to take a partial amount from the TSP, which the book says, or the manual or whatever, says that you can do that once during, you know, your lifetime being with the TSP. If you took that partial distribution and wanted to roll it into an IRA someplace else while still keeping the balance of your TSP at the TSP, you're taking required minimum distributions on a monthly basis. And my understanding of the IRS rules is that you have to have taken the distribution for the entire year before you can put money into an IRA someplace else. So how is that handled by the TSP?
All righty. Now, you're going to transfer the money from the TSP to an IRA, correct?
Correct.
All righty.
Not all of it. A portion.
No, I know. I understand.
The balance.
I
is
understand.
She still working?
Are you still working?
No.
Okay. So if you're under a required minimum distribution, Now, there's one trick, and it's perfectly legal. I won't say it's a trick. You might like this. The required minimum distribution is calculated for you each year, and that's a monthly payment. Now, there's two types of monthly payment. One is calculated and told that you have to take this amount. The other one is the reverse of it. You tell them what you want. Now, what's nice about this is if you elect that, the minimum amount that has to come out each year is $35 a month. Now, that might not hit your RMD. But if you kept it low in 1 year, you can just jack it up to as much as you want it to be and then bring it down the next year. Does that make sense?
Well, it makes sense with the exception that you're required to take out, based on the IRS table, a certain amount, and the $35 isn't going to cut it.
That's what I said. That probably is not going to cut it. But if you were saying I'd like a large amount, but I don't want to burn up my once-in-a-lifetime partial distribution, this is the way around.
No, I don't mind burning up the once-in-a-lifetime. I don't mind burning it up. It's the mechanics of... If you say it's the month of January or the month of February and all you've gotten is two monthly distributions, now you call up the TSP and you say, I want, $20,000 or $30,000 to go into an IRA someplace else. You haven't taken out a whole year's worth of distributions. That would be considered an excess contribution to an IRA if the whole amount went into the IRA. So I'm wondering how the TSP handles that.
That's not an excess contribution to the IRA because you can transfer anything into an IRA from a similar investment
but
like the TSP.
If you haven't taken your required minimum distribution for the entire year, any difference between what you've taken and what you're required to take for the year is an excess contribution.
Not to the IRA because you're going to take out the minimum out of the IRA as well. Now you're going to have a greater amount, but that will impact next year more so than this year. So your IRA... Your IRA currently, we're in 2013, looks backward at the balance of 12/31/2012, and it divides it by whatever the factor is, and that's what you have to take out in the current year. Now, if you add to it, that is going to impact you in 2014. It's not going to impact your 2013.
But it's going to cause a 50% penalty by the IRS on the difference between what you were supposed to take out of the 401k, not 401, 40, what do we call this?
TSP.
We'll call it a 403b. You were supposed to have, say you were supposed to take out $12,000, just for simplicity of talking about it. And by February, you had taken out $2,000. So you had $10,000 that wasn't taken out.
Well, you continue taking out what's required for your minimum distribution, again, based on last year's year-end number.
But it has to be taken out before you transfer the money into the IRA. Otherwise, it gets hit with the 50% penalty by the IRS.
Okay, let's just say that that's accurate. Don't transfer the full amount into the IRA. Keep X dollars in that would be equal to your mandatory distribution. And then transfer a lesser amount into the IRA. So whatever your mandatory distribution was from the thrift, call it X. And you've only taken 1/6 of X out. Then you're going to take this big lump out, then make up the 5/6 and keep that and pay taxes on it and move the rest over to the IRA.
Well, I really don't understand how that's going to work because if the person, my spouse, is on required minimum distributions, the amount is set. It can only get changed in January.
But we've met then. You've got 1/6 already covered. We're now covering the 5/6 that remains by the amount of money that you're taking out and move to the thrift. But you're not going to move all that money to the thrift. You're going to keep it. You're going to pay taxes on it so that at the end of the year you will have taken out the proper amount out of your thrift and pay taxes on it, and then transfer the rest to an IRA.
Would that be assuming that the check from the TSP comes to the individual?
You have your choice on the back of you have your choice on the back of
the IRA.
Hang on just a sec. There's a distribution form that the TSP has, and you tell them what you want. I want X, and I want you to move Y over to an IRA.
I would think, though, that the excess amount, the one that is not going to be allocated to your RMD, you'd try to do what's called a direct transfer,
right,
a trustee. So you're going directly from the TSP, make sure it's made out to the name of your IRA. Your, what it sounds like your goals are, and this is a really good question, is that to the extent you're not allocating it to the RMD, you want that piece, whatever it's going to be, to the IRA, you want to make sure it's made out directly to the name of your IRA account, not to you personally.
Yeah. I still, it's still not clear to me. I appreciate your responses, but I still can't get clear in my mind how I'm going to avoid, or how my spouse would avoid that 50% excess contribution.
Okay,
penalty.
Well, why don't you do this? Send us an email at For Your Benefit, FOR YOUR benefit at NITPINC.com.
Okay.
All righty.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. And make sure you leave your phone number, because this is not going to be an easy thing to answer just with words. All righty. Well, that was a good question. All righty, so we got a guy in California squared away, right? So to him, hang on and let's watch interest rates. I wouldn't jump now. I'll tell you a war story I tell every class. This happened about 13 years ago. Individual, very good managing their money, was leaving the federal government and had a significant amount of money in the thrift at the time. And I said, what are you going to do, put it in an IRA and play with it? And the person said, no, I'm going to buy the MetLife annuity. Now, I'm not a financial planner. This will prove why. I said, why would you do that? It only pays 7.3% interest. Fortunately, the person is still alive. And when we talk, he always reminds me of that conversation. So, in other words, I answered the question in the reverse.
You'll stick to tax, not financial planning.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get back. That RMD question, required minimum distribution, is good. I think it's a very misunderstood and extremely complex area. That's why guys like you can answer all those questions. Guys like me have to call you up. All righty. So with regards to the thrift, we've only got about 10 minutes left. If you don't mind, I would like to hit this thing that presented itself about 3 months ago. An individual worked hard, FERS, had significant amount of money in the thrift, passes. Unfortunately, the spouse passes 3 months later. Unfortunately, the two children were the beneficiaries. Some would say, what's so unfortunate about that? They have to pay income taxes on the distribution. Mm-hmm. So really, what was the mistake? I won't point fingers and say somebody made a mistake. I think it's somewhat natural that people like to keep the money in the thrift. But in this case, if that money had gone into an IRA, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, then the beneficiaries could have left it in an IRA and spread it out over their lifetime. Is that true or is that wrong? I'm throwing you a curveball. That wasn't fair.
I'll jump in for a little bit, and then you can give your thoughts as well. I think, it is true that they could do a rollover, but it's usually only the surviving spouse that can do it. But Steve, correct me if I'm wrong. The kids will need to pay taxes on it when it is distributed to them.
Well, there's an exception now that there's almost a default rule, and people confuse this with there's the spouse of one that basically said she can wait till she was 70 and a half, or the spouse would have been 70 and a half, to actually have the required minimum distribution or your required mandatory distribution, for Bob's language, the big RMD. But if it's going to go to the kids, the default is generally, in most situations, that it's going to get into what's called an inherited IRA. Inherited means it's a non-spouse, and it's going to go to the kids. All these people were writing books years ago saying, oh, my God, when money comes out, it's going to be taxed at 80-some percent because you've got the estate tax, the income tax. The fact is, if it's going to go to those kids, and again, young takes on a new definition relatively here, but let's say that we the kids have life expectancy of 40 years minimum, something like that. They don't get to add on the extra 10 years, but it's going to come out 2.5% the first year. The next year, it's going to come out 1/39 and so on. There's no recalculation, but there's a way to defer it, assuming the kids are smart enough not to just take it in their own names and pay tax on it, which would be disastrous. So I think, Micah, you're pointing out one example and one option that they may say, let's just go ahead and pay the tax. Generally, I would suggest that to the extent we can, roll it into an inherited IRA, which, you know, for kids can do, and then they can take it out as and when needed. They can always take it out faster, but ideally they'll only take out that minimum amount.
But the shortcut here would have been one spouse dies and the other spouse says, I want to move it into my IRA. I don't want to leave it in the thrift. And then when I pass, they will be able to keep it in their inherited IRA. In this case, the spouse left it in the TSP, went to the kids, and the IRS said, pay
they,
tax.
They wouldn't let them go because because it went directly from the TSP.
Yeah.
I wonder, was there a beneficiary designation that stated that too? And they still wouldn't let them do it. Okay.
No way. No, I look for every lock, back door, key. And we worked with the folks at the thrift board with the tax attorneys, and the answer was no.
Because it had not gone through to the IRS, so they're going to do them. Yeah. Okay.
And that's one of the things that lots of people either don't know or forget about is that you can roll over the TSP into an IRA, into an existing IRA.
Right. And one just comment. The President Obama, floated a trial balloon. Notice I said floated a trial balloon. This is not law. That law was pretty punitive to anybody getting that money. So the proposal was to put into effect a 5-year distribution period, not all at once, but a 5-year. Better than all in 1 year, but not as much as we would like. Now, again, that's not law, but it was just put out. And remember, Congress doesn't pass each law for each provision. They bundle them. And they have give and take. So I don't know that that's going to be. We only hope that it is.
Well, currently, most of our planning is to get around what is currently the 5-year rule. The assumption is that people have to take their money out within 5 years unless there is what's called a beneficiary designation. And if that beneficiary designation, that generally preserves the right to take it out over life expectancy. But so in a way, he would suggest that we take away most of those exceptions, and the exceptions tend to become the rule. You know, that's the guideline. So that would be very tough and be, I think, frankly, a little punitive for all these people that have tried to put money away for their retirement.
Okay. We're in the weeds. I need to come back out. I'm sorry. I mean, I know the three of us could spend all day on the weeds, but I think that we'd have no listeners. So we started the show. We talked about TSP and how it works. I think most people gravitate towards that. But then we ramped it up and we talked about distribution options with this great email from the individual about taking some of the TSP balance and buying an annuity. But we got another email this morning, and Tammy sent it to me at 5:55 a.m. I don't know how she gets up that early and reads this, but she did. And thank you, Tammy. And the question was, it's a very good question. It's going to be very hard to answer. And we're talking about taking money out of the TSP and annuities and trying to tie them all together with regards to Social Security and whatnot. Now, you had four different questions, but I think the heart of what we've got here is one needs to watch out, especially FERS. The CSRS-based annuity is pretty substantial. And you know, the TSP is, I won't say an afterthought, but it's not as key as maybe what a FERS individual has. And I refer to it as a triple-decker sandwich. Their annuity is based on, if they want it to be, at a minimum, the FERS annuity. Second, if they want it to be, Social Security. And third, if they want it to be, the TSP. Now, at a certain age, it makes sense to take Social Security out. And at a certain age, you have to take something out of the TSP. But let's say 1 year you needed more than what you maybe needed in the past. And you'd say, okay, I'll go to the thrift and I'll take $20,000 out. Well, that really floats all the boats. It potentially, and underline the word potentially, changes the tax bracket. It potentially changes the taxation of Social Security, but I think that's a stretch. I think they're going to be paying tax on 85% of it. But the hidden thing that goes up is the Medicare tax, because it's means tested. In other words, based on the size of the income. So if we have a pop in income of, say, $20,000, we could have a higher Medicare tax for the next year until the income comes back down. Did that make sense, guys?
Well, it does. And this little secret Medicare tax has been a little surprise this year. It's a biggie. So it's what people are not anticipating, and I think that goes for most people, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a very unhappy client that took the money out and didn't ask us first. Not that we have all the answers. We don't have the crystal ball, but we could have made the comment. And they wound up paying maybe $150 more a month in Medicare. And I said, it's only temporary until you bring your money, your income back down to what it was before. If you keep it up there, then it's going to stay there because it's, quote, means tested. Andrew just told us we have less than 2 minutes left, so we probably should bring this down to a slow landing. And I apologize. What's your contact points? Yeah, I mean, how does somebody get in touch with you? Do they go to your website, email?
Yeah, I think that the best thing to do would be to go to our website, and that's www.steinsperling.com. Steve and I are both there. We're in the estate planning department at Stein Sperling. Again, my name's Micah Bonavieri. This is Steve Wittes. I can be emailed at mbonavieri@steinsperling.com. Steve's is similar, but it's swittes@steinsperling.com.
Go to their website, click on our people, and you'll see the spelling. And again, it's Stein, S-T-E-I-N, Sperling, S-P-E-R-L-I-N-G. Thanks, guys. It was a good
Thank
show.
Thank you, Bob.
I learned something in the green room, and I learned something on the air. Andrew knows everything. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll be on next week. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Be a part of the USO of Metropolitan Washington's annual Stars and Stripes business-to-business networking event and fundraiser for the troops on October 4th at the Sheraton National Hotel in Arlington. Mingle with top corporate executives and celebrities, nosh on great food, and bid on amazing auction items. Join in as the USO Metro announces the 2013 Circle of Stars, honoring the top corporate donors for the year. Event sponsorships are still available. To learn more, visit WTOP.com, search charities.
Management Friday on Federal News Radio. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's workforce perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.